Hey, Leading Learning listener, if you represent a membership organization looking for ways to expand your online course catalog rapidly with high-quality content, we have good news.
At leadinglearning.com/AMA, you can find out how to make online training from the American Management Association available to your learners.
Through a partnership between AMA and Tagoras, the parent company of Leading Learning, you can give your learners access to more than 70 e-learning modules covering essential business topics ranging from leading and innovating to managing projects effectively to working in hybrid teams.
For details on how to grow your catalog with courses from a true global leader in management training, visit leadinglearning.com/AMA.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Welcome to episode 161 of the Leading Learning Podcast. In this episode, Tom Morrison, the CEO of Metal Treating Institute Management, returns as a guest. In addition to his role as an association CEO, Tom is a sought-after keynote speaker, and he's author of multiple books, including, most recently, The Dash, Making Sure Your Obituary Won't Suck. And he's always an insightful and interesting person to talk with. Before we turn to the conversation with Tom, though, we want to be sure to thank our sponsor for this episode.
And that sponsor is Learning Technology Design, or LTD, which is our annual virtual conference designed specifically for those who work in the business of lifelong learning, continuing education, and professional development. This will be our fourth time offering LTD, and we know from all the feedback we've received from past attendees that they've found it a unique and highly valuable experience. Registration is open at ltd.tagoras.com, and through the month of November, we're offering reduced pricing as well as the opportunity to extend a complimentary invitation to a colleague or friend who has not attended LTD before. We're also offering the opportunity to be a patron for the event, an option that may be of interest to companies that serve learning businesses. You can find out about that by going to ltd.tagoras.com/patron. And we'd like to spotlight some of our current patrons, including Web Courseworks, makers of the Course Stage LMS, and Event Guard, a professional development consulting firm committed to lifelong learning. You can find out more about Web Courseworks at webcourseworks.com and Event Guard at eventguard.com. And I'll note that guard there is G-A-R-D-E, a little play on avant-garde.
Definitely do take time to find out more about Web Courseworks and Event Guard. These companies have demonstrated their commitment to learning businesses by becoming patrons of LTD, and so we encourage you to support them. Now, Jeff, tell us a bit more about what you and Tom cover.
Well, this is, as we've noted, a return visit for Tom. He has been on the podcast before, and I bump into him out and about. And the thing that just always impresses me about him is that he's a big thinker. So he has, big ideas, particularly about the future and where things are going. And he's good at articulating those as a speaker. He does a lot of keynote speaking. But at the same time, he is a frontline practitioner. He actually runs a learning business himself. He's been very successful with introducing e-learning and certificate programs at the Metal Treating Institute. And we talk about that a little bit in this episode. We talk about that much more in episode 37, which he was on before, and we'll be sure to link to that. But we get a little bit of an update. But then we also talk quite a bit about the concept of Uberization, which has been kind of the core of a lot of Tom's speaking over recent years, and really get into, what that means, the potential for an Uber-like entrant into your market, or how you might become the Uber of your market. So we spend some time focusing on that, and specifically how learning businesses might be thinking about that concept and applying it and making sure that they're not Ubered when it comes down to it.
Well, that sounds great, and I really look forward to hearing what you and Tom have to say. So let's roll the conversation with Tom Morrison.
Hello out there. I'm Jeff Cobb. This is the Leading Learning Podcast, and today I'm joined by Tom Morrison.
Tom is the CEO of Metal Treating Institute Management. He's also a highly sought-after keynote speaker and author of multiple books, including most recently, The Dash, Making Sure Your Obituary Won't Suck. Tom has been on Leading Learning before, way back in episode 37, where we talked about the Metal Treating Institute's very successful certificate programs, and it's well past time to have another conversation. So Tom, welcome back to the Leading Learning Podcast.
Jeff, loving being here, man. I love getting to spread the news, the positivity, and the things that I think are going on in the marketplace that can help associations and, frankly, corporations for that matter, to see the future, train themselves, and to be the best they can be, because we're in the midst of a ginormous economic boom, in my opinion, coming up in the next 20 years. And those that are really prepared for it are going to really reap the rewards of being prepared for that. So just glad to be here and to share all that good news.
Well, and I know listeners are going to be eager to hear it. I had the chance to bump into you recently, as we sometimes do out there on the network, so to speak. You were speaking at AENC, the Association Executives of North Carolina, and just really gave a tremendous talk there, and I want to dig into some of what you said. But before we do that, though, I'd love to give you an opportunity. I said a little bit about your background there, being, you know, CEO of the Metal Treating Institute Management, being an author, that sort of thing. But what else is it important for folks to know about you so they can appreciate the perspective that you're bringing to this conversation?
Well, ever since I joined the Metal Treating Institute, I've been this way since I started was in my first association in 1995. I've been really obsessed with the future, obsessed with, because I knew the future was running at us at record pace. And so I really study every single day I come in how our association and, frankly, the people that put me on stage can grow their companies in a face of change that's just coming at us at light speed. You know, our association has grown. I mean, when I talked to you last time, our association had grown at about 1,500%. When we get done with this year, our association in the last 13 years will have grown 2,600% through the same economies, the same challenges, the same things as every other. But we've grown because it's been not a stroke of luck, but a very strategic, formidable plan and a way we approach change and the things that we bring to the marketplace. So, you know, I like to think that we're doing things right, making good decisions. We don't make them perfect all the time, but we certainly look at the right information, and we're not scared to make those hard decisions so that we can see the shifts and turns that make a positive impact on our members and our customers. So I'm just excited to be here and you know, like I say, and share that, because I think in this world, you can accomplish anything you want as long as you're willing to go after it, make good choices, and not look in the past. Let the past be the learning curve, but really look in the future and say, what do we need to change to achieve our goals in the future? Because you cannot, people need to understand this, you cannot do business in the next 5 years like you've done the last 10. You will fail miserably.
Well, let's dig into that a little bit, because obviously you've been doing something right. And, you know, as you said, this certainly would apply to any associations that are listening, but really to any business, corporation, small business. I think the concepts that you talk about apply very broadly. And I know one that's kind of at the core of your message and has been for a while is this concept of Uberization, as you put it, or you ask, you know, organizations, what is your Uber? Can you explain a little bit of what you mean by that and maybe provide some examples?
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. So Uberization came out of an article that was done in 2015 by a lady named Jenna McGregor, who they did a study of 5,000 C-suite executives, and it was an IBM study that was put on. And when they interviewed them, the number one fear of every single of over 50% of those executives was the Uberization of their industry, a way of doing business cheaper, smarter, faster, and better than they could do it. And it came out of nowhere. And the two biggest examples that you look at is Uber itself. Uber, that's why they call it Uberization. Uber was the poster child of market disruption. Uber, if you look at the numbers, in 2015, Uber did, I think it was like 173 million rides per year. In 2017, 2 years later, they've done over 2 billion rides. Now imagine the sucking sound you would hear from the taxi industry and that transportation industry of money, revenue, and customers being taken out of the system that aren't theirs anymore. So just 2 short years it happened. And you look at Airbnb. Airbnb did 3 million stays in 2012. In 5 short years in 2017, they did over 100 million stays. Multiply 100 million times three nights times $159 rate. That is a lot of zeros being taken away from the hotel industry. Huge disruptions going on. Now, here's the funny thing. a lot of people think that disruption has been this thing that's been going on in the last 5 or 10 years with Amazon, Airbnb, Uber, but it hasn't. It's been here since the early 1900s. In 1902, I always use this funny example. In 1902, let's say you were the largest horse and buggy distributor in the country, and you had a great year, and you're out shining up your wheels and brushing your horses, and all of a sudden you hear this rumbling sound coming down the dirt road, and you look over the horse, and it's a Model T from Henry Ford. Henry Ford engineered the first car in 1903. Here's the difference, though. In 1903, it took 10 years for Henry Ford to engineer mass production of that car. So that horse and buggy owner had 10 complete years to figure out, am I going to get in the automotive business? Am I going to change my horse and buggy industry? How am I going to deal with that? Today, you don't have – what I tell people is you don't have the luxury of time, because now, as you saw with Airbnb and Uber, your industry could change in 2 to 4 years. And if you don't change with it and get ahead of it, you're going to be behind the curve. And when you get behind in this day and age, it's almost too late at that point. So that's why, right, I encourage people. I've got this great new acronym called CUT. C stands for consistent change, constant change. U stands for urgency. It's imperative because of the change. You have urgency in your company and your team to change with it. And T is time. You don't have the luxury of that. So change, urgency, and time. You need to keep those things with your team on the forefront if you're going to compete in the next 5 years. So that's what Uberization is, that quick, massive change of a cheaper, better way to do things. Because today's customer is looking for a cheaper, better, faster way of doing things in their daily life.
Well, I know, just the two examples you started with, Uber itself and Airbnb. I mean, I'm an avid user at this point, as I'm sure many listeners are. And you're right. I mean, just in a period of a few years, suddenly those have become an integral part of my life. I mean, I just took an Uber yesterday to get to the airport. We used Airbnb all over the place this summer, doing family vacation. Really, truly have disrupted those industries, the taxi industry and the hotel industry. And probably a lot of peripheral industries that go along with them. I'm sure they've made a lot of executives lose sleep overnight.
Obviously, the study shows that over 50% of Fortune 500 executives are worried about it. So it's a big deal, and it's a real deal.
And so maybe turning the focus then to where most of our listeners are, which is in that market for lifelong learning, continuing education, professional development. Certainly there has been some disruption there. Can you talk a little bit about how you see Uberization playing out there, and what are some ways in which if these organizations aren't careful, these learning businesses, they might find themselves quote Ubered?
Well, you definitely got to keep an eye out for things like there's some sites like Coursera and General Assembly and Lynda.com. Lynda.com, I'm a member of that. You can, for $34.99 a month, you can get access to over 5,500 courses for free for $34.99 a month. I mean, if they ever got into the heat treating world, I can't compete with that. Mm-hmm. Ours is an average of, you can train up to 10 people on our site, on our online learning site, mchatacademy.com, for $100 a month. Train 10 people. But, now that's $39.499 is hard to compete with on an individual basis. And so the biggest thing associations and learning facilities have to look at is what sites are lurking out there. Because I know Coursera's main mission is to get high-level learning down to the average person for next to nothing. Mm-hmm. Well, associations can't compete with that. They're going to have big ad dollars because they're going to bring eyeballs. Now, we bring eyeballs, but we bring it in a different way in a nonprofit world. And so we'd have to find those sponsorship dollars to do it for free. And, it's in question as to whether we'd be able to do that. So that's what I tell every association is your biggest Uber is these sites getting into your technical expertise and offering coursework for little to nothing that it makes it hard for you to compete with. Because frankly, members are traditionally loyal, but when you can save a couple of grand a year on your corporate training package because you found a site that can do it for free and do it just as good, that's tough.
That's a high price to pay for loyalty, yeah.
Exactly. So I encourage everybody, you need to have, I always call it the chief change officer. The chief change officer, the CCA, is that person or couple people who are looking around your sphere and your space and making sure they got their eyes out on the radar screen to say, is this kind of stuff coming our way so that we can be aware of it and get ahead of it? You got to make sure you have your niche solidified so people know that you are the experts in that area of training. And to me, that's the biggest thing we all have to look for is these sites that are trying to look for free.
And so that's a good point about having, somebody who's in charge of this, or I imagine maybe at some organizations, it might be a small committee or something that's really focused on it. But what should that person or those people be doing? I mean, how do they track this? I know you've talked about things like, you know, making sure you're on top of, you know, demographic shifts and buying habits and emerging tech. I mean, what's kind of the process, the habits that anybody who's going to track change and try to stay ahead of being Uberized, basically, what do they need to be doing?
Well, here's the thing. If it's there, it's on the internet. So you go out to YouTube and you type in, you know, dental training. If you're in the dental world, you type in dental training and see what pops up to see if there's any sites that's coming up with courses. I mean, I went to learn how to play the bass, and I went in and typed how to play a bass, and there was a 51 course, 30 minutes each course, set of videos online for free that I could learn how to play the bass. Well, so you want to go out, like in our world, we say heat treating. I'd go out and type in heat treating 101 and see what kind of videos are out there. Now, there's a lot of ancillary people that do, you know, they're individuals that want, they have a passion for videos and training. And so they, in our industry, they might put on a 5-minute video on how to do something, but there's no coordinated effort to free training out there in our industry yet, but there may be in others. So you want to look up YouTube. You also want to go out to Google and just Google your industry and type in training after it and see what pops up. And to me, that's the two biggest things you need to be looking at is YouTube and Google, and see if what pops up that's out there in the world that could be coming into your world in terms of training.
Yeah, I get the impression, well, I know from working with so many organizations that most of them are not doing that. And in fact, a lot of times when we come in, that's one of the first things we're going to do. And it's often very revealing. They may think they have no competition when in fact, you know, there's a ton of stuff out there that's starting to infringe on their market, whether directly or indirectly. Now that begs the question, though. You know, let's say you go out there and you find that, you know, maybe it's a member. I've got an association in mind right now where they've got a member who is just going to town creating like foundational content in one of the most core areas of their training. And he's attracting a big audience. And I mean, he's doing really well at it. Let's say you're an organization, you go out there and you find that. I mean, I've heard you mention a few things along the way here, like, you know, say sponsorships is something that may be more important, or, you know, really having a coordinated catalog, maybe a career pathway that's well defined,
right,
for your audience. I mean, what are some of the ways, the strategic ways in which learning businesses may need to be thinking now when they encounter that kind of competition coming into their market?
Well, there's two things that you have to look at when you have one. I always ask people, how did you let a member get out in front of your learning? Was it because you failed to change and you were doing the old learning? As I said before, you continue to do it the old way and not the new way. So there's that notion of, you know, you almost got what you deserve because you refused to move into the future with training. And somebody said, you know what, this, what you're doing for us isn't good enough. I'm going to make sure it happens. And there are members out there that's going to do that because they're frustrated with the path of the association or the training entity. Mm-hmm. So there's two things you at that point when that happens that you can look at. You can either become a competitor or a collaborator. And you one have to look and say, all right, if we choose to compete, can we compete? You know, there is a lot of business, so it doesn't like you have to get all of it, because they may have their niche and you can carve out your niche. We've carved out a huge niche at MTI, and we're trying to protect that niche with ongoing innovation for the future in terms of our content and stuff and our delivery. So you got to find out if you can compete. If you can't compete because they're so good, then it's imperative that you look and say, we need to somehow collaborate. And that may be that they are the leading learning source, but you may be, you know, you may get a royalty for pushing people to their learning center. So it's better to get 15% of something than 0% than 100% of nothing. And so, you know, you either got to learn to where you got to compete or collaborate with who's driving the leading training in your industry if you're not the leading training.
It does seem like there's going to be a lot more need for collaboration going forward. Cause you know, as you just suggested, I mean, somebody might come in and carve out a particular niche. Even if they don't, I mean, it's hard for any one training entity, one learning business to cover everything, you know, and to cover it well. So it seems like there's just bound to be more collaboration, more partnership, going forward in this learning business in general.
I agree. Well, as industries are growing, There's enough business for everybody, because there's a whole niche of people that won't like their level of training for some reason. You know, it's kind of like there's a whole group of people that think Starbucks makes the best coffee in the world. There's a whole bunch of people that think their coffee stinks, and they would not go into Starbucks for nothing. So Everybody's got to figure out who their customer is and their niche and really play to those people.
Well, and to that point, this might be a good place to catch up a little bit on what you're actually doing there at MTI. And, you know, as I said at the beginning, you've been on before, and we talked in pretty good depth about your e-learning program there and your certificates there. But and we'll point folks back to that episode, because I definitely recommend going back and listening to everything you said there. But maybe for those who, you know, don't remember or are tuning in to for the first time, can you give a little background on, you know, how you managed to stand up what by all accounts is a very successful e-learning program at MTI? Because I know a lot of organizations struggle with that, you know, either getting it up in the first place or getting it up and then having it actually generate revenue. You've done both very successfully. Can you give a little bit of a background and an update on where you are with that?
So in 12 years ago, our board had 5 courses in text format in a Word document. But they said, Tom, when I came on board in 2005, they said, your number one goal is to get these online for us to be a class. They had spent 4 years and $8,000 and had nothing to show for it. And so I just did a little bit of homework and research. Within 30 days, I found an incredibly user-friendly LMS that allowed you to build your courses point and click. They only charged a fixed fee depending on how many users you had in the system on the biggest day of the month. And so it fit us an ability to, and I knew subscriptions were going to be the thing. I didn't want to sell courses one at a time. I wanted to sell corporate subscriptions, just like dues, because if you can get a company to pay you $2,400 a year as opposed to paying $25 a course, and it does one thing for them. It fixed their training costs, which business owners like things when they're fixed, because then they can budget for it. So I took those 5 courses. I got them onto the LMS, and I knew that we weren't going to sell individual courses. I learned from the CAE. People don't log on and say, I want to learn about member engagement. I want to learn about this. They say, you know what? I want to be a CAE.
CAE is the Association Executives or American Society of Association Executives. That's their credential, the CAE, right?
Correct. They want to buy a finished accomplishment. So when they're done, they say, you know what? I'm a CAE. So we immediately created what's called the Qualified Furnace Operator Program. And all that Qualified Furnace Operator Program said is that you completed these 5 courses with at least an 80% grade in each of the 5 courses. And that thing took off like crazy, because when you put those Qualified Furnace Operator certificates on the wall in your what we call our wall of excellence in any one of our member companies, customers walking through seeing that sees there's a lot of expertise running around. Auditors who are auditing for third-party entities like ISO and others, they see all this training documentation. So that's a good thing. So then I figured out that the younger generation coming through their minds of video gaming was going to want to build on those. We didn't want one big certificate. We needed a series of certificates that built on levels on one another. So I threw another 5 courses that were really important on top of the QFO, and we created the Heat Treat Technical Specialist. So within about 3 to 4 months, someone could come into the industry and get 2 certificates of expertise fairly quickly of knowledge base. And then after that, we created the Heat Treat Specialist, which was adding another 20 courses. So now we've had them in 2 quick ones. Now they're going to go in for the long haul and make a 60-hour course called Heat Treat Specialist. And that was another 20 courses on top of the 10 that they already took. So we just kept building certificate programs that build on those. And then we've launched a new one last year that's 9 modules on safety training and plant safety. And the biggest one we did was we did a 12-module management training. It's about 30-minute courses with testing at the end. So here's the deal. You come in as a beginner at QFO. You then want to advance your career. You do the HTTS, then you do the HTS. And then if you're going to actually manage people, I'm telling you, Jeff, I'm never amazed when people put someone in charge of 2 or more people who have absolutely no training skills whatsoever. So it's kind of mandatory in our industry that if you're going to manage people, you have to take this 12-course module set to learn the basics of just people management and personality management and conflict resolution skills. It's just important. So we built those certificates, and we then began to sell organizational subscriptions to our members. And probably, I think, 30 to 40% of our members have a corporate subscription in that program. It went from $0 in 2005 to now it generates over $120,000 to us every single year.
Wow. And there's a lot in there to unpack, I think, related to what we were talking about before this around Uberization and, you know, kind of protecting your place within a niche. I mean, in the first place, I'm struck by the fact that you really took the time to understand both what the learner would be interested in, you know, the individual going through the training, but really what the employer was going to be interested in, and making sure you understood those employer needs when you put together this offering in the first place. Because I mean, I've seen this in other fields, that probably more than anything helps to make sure there's going to be a buyer. There's going to be, the economics are going to be there, that somebody's going to pay for this, basically. So you did that up front. And then, I mean, it also sounds like at this point, I'm listening to you talk about it, and it sounds like, you know, it's very trendy now to talk about stackable credentials, you know, these things that stack on. And you were kind of doing stackable credentials before stackable credentials were cool in a way. And you gave people a pathway, which I would imagine at this point, and you can tell me your level of confidence around this, even if lynda.com did decide, hey, there's something going over here in the metal treating industry, you know, they've got a pocket full of cash. They could go out and develop some courseware, but it almost wouldn't be worth their time to do that, because you've kind of got it locked up in a way, because you've understood it so well and delivered the right product. I mean, how am I, are you that confident with what you've created? Or
I'm never as confident to think that no one could come in and do anything that could Uberize our industry. I mean, that's where you fall complacent and actually get Uberized. We're constantly thinking about how do we continue to make the brand of the heat treat specialist certificate. How do we keep that brand high? Because that's the CAE of our industry. So we don't want anybody to come in and be able to offer another type of certificate that could have the same level of confidence. So it's been a long journey of 12 years, and it's like the most accepted training in the industry. So, you know, we just continue to keep evolving. You know, the biggest thing I think the biggest thing that we did early on is we started asking ourselves the key questions. What is the highest pain point in associations? They spend too much time on perceived value and not actual value. And actual value is those highest pain points where every single individual or business owner in an association that's a member wake up every day and they have frustrations in their company or their individual process that keeps them up at night. And we started thinking the number one is the new person gets hired and someone's got to train them. And the owner doesn't have the time, but a lot of times them or their key people have to take time away from their operations to train those people. We said, you know what, we need online training. They could sit them down in 1 hour a day for the first week, and they would have a big general understanding of what happens in the heat treat plant. And that was a big part of our QFO, our Qualified Furnace Operator program. They could watch that 5-module set with 11 hours of videos and textbook, student handbooks, and take tests. And at the end of 5 days, they would at least understand the basics of the terminology of what they're doing walking around the plant. And that's something that I think most industries lose out on. That's probably the number one piece of education that they could do for any business owner is, you know, sit your people in front of our courses for 3 weeks, and they're going to know everything they need, at least know on a base level to work in your place of business.
That is such a good point. We see that again and again, that there's an opportunity, I mean, particularly for a trade or professional association, but really for anybody who wants to kind of lead learning in whatever field or sector they're serving to, you know, whether you call it onboarding, whether you call it orientation, we've consistently seen organizations knock it out of the park when they've come up with a really good orientation program that can be used industry-wide. And then you're setting the standard. You're setting the baseline from which all other training happens, you know, after that. So that's fantastic. And I love, too, that you brought up brand, because that's something we hadn't really talked about up until this point. It just seems like brand is going to be more and more important to defend your niche. You know, if you are known as you said, you know, in the association world, if you're getting credentialed as an association executive, it's the CAE. You know, if you're and it's going to be something else in other fields. But if you own that brand, that's also a very strong point of defense. And I think probably not enough organizations invest enough in developing that brand over time.
Well, one of the things that we do about once every quarter in our newsletter, in our online content, we publish the top 10 members who have the most heat treat specialists in their plant.
That's great.
Love that. And it inspires other plants to go, oh my God, especially if it's your local competition, we've got to get our people in that training so we can get our name on that list. So it's using peer pressure, which is very effective, to helping people want to be a part of the process, because when they see their competition, they see other people really excelling in those areas, they're like, we got to be a part of that. So it's about to carrying your message online so everybody sees it in a way that it strikes them as we got to do that.
That's great. And I was just working with an organization last week that is as part of the strategic discussion that came up as something that they was also very effective with their membership that they haven't done enough of, and they're going to start doing a lot more of that because that is very effective to get that sort of competitive element out there like that and get people really engaged with what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Well, Tom, before we wrap up, this has been a fantastic conversation. I wanted to switch gears a little bit. One thing that's always impressed me so much about you is you're obviously somebody who values learning yourself a great deal. I mean, you're immersed in ideas. You're always working through them, speaking about them, writing about them. Obviously, using them in your position as CEO at MTI. So, we've started asking everybody who comes on the show at this point about their own sort of personal learning experiences. And the specific question I want to pose is, what's one of the most powerful learning experiences you've been involved in as an adult since finishing your formal education?
You know, for me, I'm not a huge book reader, so I don't like to sit down and read a, 350-page book. But I with my obsession about trying to be the disruptor itself, I spend a lot of time each week watching TED Talks, watching YouTube videos, reading articles, just to keep that micro learning segment, pinpointing my wife looks at my What's Your Uber presentation between now and what it was 6 years ago, and it looks nothing like it does. It looks somewhat like, but she says, Tom, that thing has changed so dramatically. It is evolved, and it's always evolving because the industries are evolving.
Right.
So for me, my biggest learning experience is having an obsession with micro learning so that I can take in the bits of information, because things don't change in large quantities. They always change in small quantities that begin to mushroom into a larger picture. Mm. And so my obsession is making sure I'm getting in the little bits and pieces of information on a daily to weekly basis that keep me with or ahead of the change that's going to one day kind of mushroom and cause big change for anybody that didn't stay abreast of it. And I think that's what's been our success is trying to stay ahead of that curve as opposed to only wanting to learn when big market disruption shows up on our doorstep and we go, oh my gosh, we have a problem.
Right, right. Now, I love that. Both the fact that you're continually doing it and also that, really paying attention to the small changes that are going to add up to a lot more. Reminds me, we've had Rohit Bhargava, who writes the Non-Obvious series about trends on the podcast before. And I think his whole approach to curating trends is very similar. He's always just dialed into, the incremental things that are happening and then stepping back and figuring out, okay, where is that taking us? And I can see how your speaking has evolved because of doing that. I'd love to ask, just so, listeners can go check it out. Do you have a favorite, TED Talk or two that that you just always, tell folks they should listen to or watch, I guess?
I can't remember the exact title, but there was a great talk on how to communicate with people and have your message heard. And the guy just really, I can't tell the acronym because I can't remember it as distinctly, but it had a profound, I was doing a lot of it, but it helped me tweak how I did things and said things to get people to really understand what I'm trying to say. There was one on how to speak and get your message heard, which was phenomenal. And then the best ones I ever heard was a doctor who, when he retired, they put him in charge of trying to fix the homeless problem in Utah. And what they discovered was they gave 15 of the most homeless people that were homeless for over 365 days. They gave them all an apartment, a one bedroom apartment for a year. And what they discovered is the cost of taking care and providing housing for a homeless person was way cheaper than the social cost it cost of leaving them on the street. Because when you think about the homeless on the street, you got public responder, police responders, emergency techs, addictions in a lot of cases, emergency room visits, but when they put them in a one bedroom efficiency and gave them a place to stay, they saw the cost of it to dramatically decrease because they had actually a purpose and a home to be at every single day. So that was one that caught me, I guess, struck me as I wouldn't have thought that, but the doctor did a great job of showing the data and the studies that showed how it has an impact.
Well, that's great. We'll look around and maybe we can come up with the links to those based on that information. We'll put them in the show notes if we do. But there's just obviously so much rich content out there, and to continually be kind of tapped into it just keeps you thinking as you obviously have been and evolving. So to wrap up here, great conversation as always. If listeners want to know more about you and your work, where should they go?
You know, everything about Tom Morrison is at my website, tommorrison.biz. It's got promo videos. It outlines my keynotes that I do. I'm really passionate about getting in front of audiences, especially association conferences, that want to see their people be engaged in the future. Because here's the thing. If your members are engaged and profitable in the future, they're going to have money to pay your dues. Mm. And they're going to be more excited and more engaged members, because they're going to be – when people have more money, they tend to be more involved. So my goal is to help people understand the future so they can be prepared for it, so they can maximize their profitability and productivity from it, so they can be really good members. And here's the one thing I always flow through, is that the association is the number one resource for that activity. So a lot of speakers don't flow that through, because I'm a CEO of an association. Everything's got that angle and that bent on it, which is I really believe that. So I say it with passion. But I mean, then go to tommorrison.biz, check out everything, but look forward to hopefully hearing from anybody out there that's looking for an energetic, deep content presenter that can really engage their people next year.
Well, and I'll give you an unsolicited plug. As I mentioned earlier, I got to see you speak at the Association Executives of North Carolina recently. You did a fantastic job. The folks there were clearly very, very engaged. The discussion at my table and just the reaction afterwards, you could see that you really did have an impact. So great to see you there. Thanks so much for coming here again, Tom, and being once again on the Leading Learning Podcast.
Jeff, always a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to future times to get together and talk. Always love being with you.
That wraps up our interview with Tom Morrison. To get show notes for this episode, go to leadinglearning.com/episode161.
When you check out the show notes, you'll also see various options for subscribing to the podcast, and that includes not only iTunes, but also sources like iHeartRadio and Stitcher. And if you're getting value out of what you hear, we'd be truly grateful if you would subscribe, as it helps us to get some data on the impact of what we're doing.
We'd also be grateful if you would take a minute to give us a rating on iTunes or wherever you happen to listen. You can go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes. That will put you in the right place for leaving a review on iTunes. Jeff and I personally appreciate your rating and review, but even more importantly, reviews and ratings play a really important role in helping the Leading Learning podcast show up when people are searching for content about leading learning.
And we'd be grateful if you check out our sponsor for this episode, Learning Technology Design, or LTD, at ltd.tagoras.com. Again, this is our annual virtual conference, and if you, like most of our Leading Learning listeners, work in the business of lifelong learning, continuing education, and professional development, this is an event that you do not want to miss.
Finally, we hope you will tell someone about the podcast. You can send out a tweet by going to leadinglearning.com/share, or if tweeting isn't your thing, pick the social network or other medium of your preference and spread the good word.
Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.